Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and brain puzzles. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined this week, as always, by my compatriots. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
Dan, you said that so loud it scared me.
Sorry. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Hey, how's it going? And also, always here, our good friend, Mr. Schmutter.
Oh, this is going to be a gas. Special gas.
It was too important a week not to, like, it was more important than we could handle on our own, is my point. You, like, there's just, it's
you
too
got
much.
The, you got the also starring at the end, you know, where they put in the...
You
know what I meant to do before the show?
The good guests.
What I meant to do before the show is tell you guys to just, let's just do a gag where we just pretend that Lisa's always here, which is sort of the theme of the show we're watching. And then I forgot until Dan started doing the intro.
I heard you start talking. I was like, I don't know what Guy was going to say, but I guess we're done.
I know,
and you just start chanting for the podcast, for the podcast.
For the podcast.
Yes, well, that's right. We are here this week to discuss.
It's not a joke worth laboring over. Sorry, go ahead.
We're here this week to discuss the first two episodes of Marvel's first streaming series on Disney Plus, and that is, of course, WandaVision. And so, yeah, we'll do a quick recap of the first two episodes, and then we'll talk about them a bit more. And John Moltz has volunteered to be the inaugural sacrifice for this week's recap.
Yeah, and let me just say how it warmed my heart to see the Marvel intro once again.
Yes, it's been too long.
Like, oh my god, I love it so much, and they've updated it, so there's a bunch of stuff in there from Endgame.
There's a lot of criminology.
Yes,
you know what? It's been so long since the Soviets went away that I don't even know what the hell that is called anymore. But yeah, like the. If you go through that frame by frame, like, they've updated it a lot. Like, the scenes that are showing on the size of the letters are all different and include Endgame stuff. Anyway, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I'm not the only one that paused, like, frame by frame to look at it and go, oh, that changed. Oh, they're emphasizing Doctor Strange more now.
Yeah. Lisa, you're on
Did you see Baby Yoda? Baby Yoda was there. No, he wasn't. His name is Grogu.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Where he's wearing the Infinity Gauntlet. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. 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 And he's like, snap or snap not. And then he jumps around like a pinball, and it's crazy. Yeah.
He would just swallow the Infinity Stones, you know?
He would.
That is a kind of problem.
Like an entire season of The Mandalorian where they just keep turning him upside down and shaking him in the hopes that he'll pop them back out again.
Yeah, but instead something weird happens like every time, like force fields bounce him. Off him or the time goes backwards.
Is Baby Yoda a Florkin?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, maybe.
Who knows?
Yeah. All right. John,
related? Okay,
why all right.
So we open on a classic sitcom title sequence done sort of in the style of the Dick Van Dyke Show. Then we get some domestic joking between Vision and Wanda in their black and white house, and they notice that there is a heart on today's date on the calendar in the kitchen, but neither of them seems to know why. Vision goes to work while Wanda entertains their crazy neighbor, Agnes, and they think the event must be her anniversary with Vision, so they plan a romantic evening at work. Vision can't figure out what the company does, but he does find out that his boss, Mr. Hart, and his wife were coming to dinner that night. So the heart must mean hearts. We then get a commercial for a toaster that beeps kind of like a bomb and is made by Stark Industries. Vision and the hearts arrive at the house, and Wanda surprises them in a negligee. They manage to smooth it over, but dinner is going to be a problem, so Wanda calls in Agnes while Vision stalls. She tries to use her powers to make the dinner, but it all goes wrong, and she ends up making breakfast for dinner instead. They sit down to eat, and they're unable to answer basic questions from the Harts about their lives together. Mr. Hart starts to get sort of mad about it, then he starts choking on something, and his wife tells him to stop it, and then she turns to Wanda and starts saying, stop it, stop it. Vision saves his boss by sticking his hand inside of him and pulling the piece out that he was choking on, and suddenly everything is better. They said, oh, it's been a wonderful evening. They get up to go, and he says he's going to give him a promotion, and they sit down and have a chat afterwards.
How great is that scene, by the way? Sorry, not to interrupt you, except I intentionally interrupted you. But that scene is killer. Like, it is, it's so great. It's really, really chilling.
It's bizarre. Mm-hmm. So they sit down and talk, and they you know, remark on how it's strange that they don't seem to know what the heck has happened to their lives. And they decide to make wedding rings when Wanda makes wedding rings for the two of them. And then they smile to the camera, and we pull back, and we see that it's on a TV in a S.W.O.R.D. command center. And we go to episode two. Vision and Wanda are asleep in separate beds, and there's a thump outside. They're both scared. Something keeps bumping up against the window. Wanda makes the beds move together, and she opens the window, and it looks like it's just a tree. But she makes their bed be one bed, and they make the best of it. Cut to a new title sequence done in the style of Bewitched. We return to their living room, which is now totally different from the first episode, mm-hmm. and they're rehearsing their magic act for a talent show for the local school. Vision leaves for the neighborhood watch meeting, and Wanda is getting ready to go to a planning meeting for the talent show, but she hears this helicopter sound and a thump. She goes outside and finds a bright red and yellow toy helicopter in the bushes with a S.W.O.R.D. logo on it. Agnes shows up, and the two are off to the meeting. Agnes warns her about Dottie, the tyrannical leader of the committee. Wanda misses some cues during the meeting, but she makes a new friend in Geraldine. At the watch meeting, Vision meets some neighborhood characters, and there's some frivolity and joking, and he accidentally swallows some gum, which gets in his works. Wanda tries to smooth things over with Dottie, but Dottie says she's heard things about her. Wanda says she doesn't mean anyone any harm, which is a very strange thing to say. Yep. And Dottie says she doesn't believe her. Then over the radio, we hear, I'm pretty sure it's Jimmy Woo, voice, who is trying to contact Wanda, asking her who is doing this to her. Dottie says, "Who is that? Who are you?" Then she breaks a glass in her hand and bleeds red in the black and white television. And the moment is kind of broken. Then we get a commercial for a watch made by Strucker. He'll make time for you.
Did you see the depth on that? 1,000 meters.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
No, yeah.
That's like, I don't know.
That's way too deep.
What, one atmosphere is 33 feet? Like, that's like 100 atmospheres. Like,
I was told there would be no math.
I'm sorry. No, because it's not like a cute number that seems cool. It is. Yeah. It's an obscene number. Like, that's ridiculous. It's a kilometer underwater. That's nuts.
Vision is late to the talent show, and he shows up acting kind of drunk because of the gum. He uses his powers to do the act, and Wanda has to cover for him by making reasonable explanations using her powers. Wanda gets the gum out of him after they're done, and they try to sneak away because they feel like they've screwed up the entire talent show, but Dottie ends up giving them an award for the funniest act. They go home and have a moment together, and then Wanda goes to make popcorn, and suddenly she appears to be months pregnant for the children. She asks if it's really happening, and Vision says yes, but there's a noise outside again, a bumping noise. They go outside, and out of a manhole comes a guy in a beekeeper's outfit with a S.W.O.R.D. logo on it, and he's surrounded by bees. And she said, and he looks at them, and she says no. And then everything rewinds to where she asks Vision if it's really happening. They kiss, and suddenly things start changing to color. And as the credits start, we hear Jimmy Woo again asking, "Who's doing this to you, Wanda?" Mm-hmm. And that is the end of those two.
I would like to offer an award. First of all, it must be delightful to be, as Paul Bettany, to be able to play Vision in a totally different way from the Vision we know. But that Magic Zone sequence is, I think, like a top 10 scene. It is, I thought it was
so
frankly
funny.
Hilarious and amazing.
I had no idea he was so funny.
Yeah. And I think this show is actually fairly funny. I mean, mm-hmm. there's definitely some jokes that made me laugh, even though it's done in the style of old television shows that if you were to watch today in general are not that funny.
No, they clearly have a lot of love for the material.
Yeah.
And
Elizabeth Olsen's facial expressions and acting in episode one alone, like when there's the scene where Mrs. Hart throws open the shutters and she flat out panics because she's got things flying in the air.
Yeah.
And her expression and her body posture are just so pitch perfect for mm-hmm. I Love Lucy. Mm-hmm. Like she's channeling Lucille Ball. And I was like, oh, this is going to be good because we get to see these actors really get let off the leash. So instead of being all, oh, I have a character moment between fights like they were in the movies, it's more like, oh, I'm all character all the time.
Right.
And
right.
I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Because like, yeah. I mean, how much time do we really get to spend with either of these characters in the handful of movies that they're in? Right.
Right.
Like they get yeah. a little more time than some because we, you know, have the lead up to sort of Vision's demise in Infinity War. But you know, with all of that, I have to imagine their on-screen time is like, you know, well under an hour in all the movies that they've been in.
I don't know why they're in love, to be honest.
No, like,
they shorthanded a lot of that.
Like, well, they're going to be together, so they're going to be together. I don't know. Right. She got along better with Hawkeye, who that was certainly not a romantic thing, but they're clearly pals. I didn't get any of that from Vision in any of those movies, other than
he likes her. I mean,
right?
You know, a lot of it's Civil, so
I feel like most of the heavy lifting is done in like 5 minutes in Civil War. Because like the Wanda Hawkeye relationship, I don't know whose idea it was to bring that to the table, but what I liked about that is Hawkeye is clearly like, she's a kid, she needs some guidance. Yep. I don't care what she did in the past. And I like how that through line gets carried through the whole series, because at the end of Avengers Endgame, you know, when they're standing at the lake and talking, like both of them are kind of connected by their shared loss with Natasha. And I was like, come on, invite her to the farm. Just say it.
I mean, you know, she's always welcome at the farm.
Yeah.
Like she probably hangs out with Linda Cardellini all the time, which would be my first choice to do.
And you're like, I would watch that series. But like in Civil War, there's this scene where Vision materializes into the room. And her first line is, we've talked about this. And I was like, okay, if you read a lot into that character note, which you kind of have to in these movies, if you read a lot into it, like, he's somebody who's learning how to be in the world, like, in a body, after having spent his life as an artificial intelligence inside Tony Stark's helmet. She's learning how to be in the world after having been an orphan and a terrorist. So maybe that's where they, like, depend on each other emotionally, and then... Sure. Hop, skip, jump. It's romantic because it has to be.
Well, they're also both people who I think don't fundamentally feel like they don't fit in necessarily. And I think that's part of it. And also, both of them, one could argue, I mean, they're linked by both of them sort of being creations of the stones. Which I think gives them at least a sort of a common ground. It doesn't necessitate that they have to be in a romantic relationship, but it makes them sort of simpatico.
But people swipe right on last.
Being related through or being connected through some kind of mind stone is not...
That's not a fundamental relationship.
It's not typically the way I date. I mean, I've tried that on Tinder a few times, and it didn't work.
I do think that they definitely shorthanded a lot of it. I don't feel like any of it feels like particularly wrong.
Yeah,
they have good chemistry.
I've seen other movies where it's like, why are these two people together? I mean, like the Wolverine movie where he falls in love with Mariko. He has much more chemistry with this sort of assassin. I can't think of her name right now, but the other character, the female character in that movie. And he has absolutely no chemistry with Mariko whatsoever in that movie. And it just seems like it doesn't seem like it makes any sense. They're completely forcing it. And I don't feel like this feels forced.
They have good chemistry.
It feels like we've skipped a number of steps.
Well, we've skipped a lot. And I think that's part of the point of the show too, right? Is that we don't know their history any more than they don't know. In fact, we know slightly more.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. Also, he's dead. So this is.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Like,
examining their relationship and trying to make it make sense maybe doesn't even make sense, because it's clearly she's gone a little over the top here. So,
well, like in both episodes, she has to kind of tell him how to be, because there's that moment with the hearts at the table where, you know, Mr. Hart is choking and Deborah Jo Rupp, who is fantastic in that scene.
She's so great.
Goes from stop it to like pleading and crying, stop it, stop it.
Yeah.
And Wanda looks up and she breaks like 1950s cadence and 1950s character. And she says just very calmly and a little bit annoyed, Vision, fix this. Like she has to remind him he can. because he wouldn't have thought of it on his own. And then in the second episode, when she's trying to figure out why he's malfunctioning backstage, you see him just look and go, oh, okay, this is how I can fix this. And then boom, it's fixed.
Right.
And right. I feel like I don't have any good theories yet as to what's going on. Like,
no,
did Wanda tangle with an alien intelligence? Has she snapped from grief? Like, I don't know, but I feel like we've gotten clues in both episodes that Vision is going to come, that Vision is Wanda's creation or Wanda's construction. Yeah. And she's kind of scripting him.
Right. She's the writer. Right. Yeah, yeah. That's how I saw it too. Was like, she can't do anything autonomously.
And the fact that she can rewind the whole thing makes me think that this is all like her doing in some way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe somebody has instigated this by manipulating her somehow, but she's kind of still in control of a lot of the elements of it.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering, like, how many of the characters are covert agents or some entity sent to interrogate her? Because the whole scene with the hearts, like, Mrs. Hart is always trying to get into the kitchen with Wanda, or trying to keep tabs on Wanda, or trying to see what's up with Wanda. Like, that's her whole MO through the whole thing. And then she and Mr. Hart are doing the questioning. It goes off the rails and they leave, and they're relieved to have gotten out with their lives. And then, you know, you have that scene with Dottie where Wanda's like, I assure you, I don't mean you any harm. And Dottie's like, I don't believe you. Well, you realize for a moment that Dottie's been keeping a bead on Wanda the whole time.
And also she's afraid of her.
And Dottie broke character too. Like, they both broke character in that moment.
Right. I got the impression that somehow Wanda had co-opted, like, in some case, in the same way she's scripting Vision. For some reason, she is controlling all of these people, some of whom may be real and some of whom aren't.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a real neighborhood that she's like, you know, she's doing this to. And you know, and these people are just like desperate, and particularly Mrs. Hart is like, please stop whatever it is you're doing to us.
It's like that Twilight Zone episode in the cornfield where
I think that's exactly it. Did anybody else want to see Dottie interact with the bunny rabbit?
Yes. Emma Caulfield. Yeah, I was so delighted to see her. I paused the first time she showed up on screen to like say to my wife, like, is that Emma Caulfield? She's like, who is that? I'm like, it's Anya from Buffy. Yeah.
I couldn't place it for like the longest time, and finally had to pause it and fire up IMDb. And I'm like, oh yeah, I married her like 30 years ago. I love Emma Caulfield. She is like legitimately really funny. Like, she's got really just great straight man line delivery, kind of like really, really great.
Oh, and she was so
kills
good
it in this
scene.
Episode.
Yes. She really does. She really does. She's fantastic. She's perfect.
And
for that
I'm
role too.
Irritated, and just the way she says it, you're like, oh, wow.
She's so good. So great. Yeah. But I'm like, man, you've got a rabbit, and you've got Emma Caulfield right there. Just make the joke. Just do the joke, please.
I mean, I think she's great, but I think the real winner in all of it is Catherine Hahn, who is just so good. She's so priceless as the goofy neighbor. I mean, when she looks at the mailman's butt,
does that bit,
and cracking up, and her comment about it, she's like, well, Wanda, we need to talk.
How can anyone get
about how I'm dressed? Well, yes, but we don't have time for that.
Breaks up the flask, and she's like, how can anyone get through this sober?
I have questions about her, because she makes the jump, right? And I think we do see Deborah Jo Rupp briefly in the school fundraising scene.
Her hair's a little longer, her hat's a little bit different,
right? But like, I'm wondering about Agnes, like, how much is she in on it? Like, how much is she aware of what's going on? Is she part of this, or is she
Agnes
being co-opted?
100% knows what's first of all, I think she's Agatha Harkness, to be honest.
I mean, it seems like too obvious, maybe, so we'll see.
Maybe. But I mean,
it's literally a shortening of Agatha. Agatha.
I know. Yeah, I know. But whatever.
Most people are familiar with either. So
So you can do it. That's my first order conspiracy corner. Second order conspiracy corner is they're trying to throw us off, and I don't know. She's Shuri from Black Panther.
Bold move.
But she's sting. She's delightful. The actor really, really manages to both inhabit the world of comedy that the shows are putting on, while breaking that fourth wall and having a sense of like cognition of like what's actually happening. Like, the way that she breaks the expectations of the world sort of lead you as the viewer to know that she's kind of onto the game that's going on here. Yeah. And that's a tough thing to pull off in a show that's really meta and kind of weird.
Conspiracy corner theory, Ralph doesn't exist.
No, Ralph does not exist. No.
Oh, yeah. He's like Maris on Frasier, exactly. Where you just never... Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I would not be surprised if they just do that. Like, they're definitely taking things from all of these classic shows. Never Seeing the Wife is perfect. Remember for years we never saw Cliff Clavin's mom?
Yeah. And then there's Vera with Norm.
Yep. Vera with Norm. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just...
This is alternatively Star Trek / Cheers, and then with some superheroes sprinkled on top show.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about Star Trek The Next Generation with this show, too. You know, when cycling through the what's going on theories, I was like, well, maybe their brains were hijacked by aliens. That's happened on Star Trek Next Generation. Maybe Wanda's going to have like an alien pregnancy. That's also happened on Star Trek Next Generation. Maybe it's a holodeck simulation of some sort. That's also on Star Trek.
Happened on Star Trek The Next Generation. Definitely happened. Yeah.
All these stories have been told before.
Yeah. No, the beekeeper costume intrigued me because I can't figure out, like, why a beekeeper costume? And I know people are like, oh, it's AIM, but they had, like, the sword logo on the back.
It's not AIM. It's sword.
Yeah, it's not
But AIM. Is the beekeeper thing how something else manifests in this world, right? Like, we see that, but it's something else.
Like, it makes sense within the time period. Like, you wouldn't have, like, the regular suits in the 1960s, so it comes off as a beekeeper suit.
That moment does feel particularly Legion-like. To compare it to another superhero show, it has that sort of bizarre, like, we're not really going to explain this, don't worry about it.
I mean, my take is that that's a hazmat suit, and the bees are like the interference that they have from a gadget that makes them
something like that
less manipulatable.
And my theory,
I wonder if we will get if one of the next episodes will be explaining those back things that happen. I mean, I would imagine that at some point we're going to see a scene where a helicopter goes flying into
or a drone up what's or going something.
On yeah, it
just
man,
turns
that,
into the toy.
That poor helicopter crew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we do know
they're like going to be in the next Ant-Man movie hanging out or
well, we do know, I mean, and again, this taps into something I think, you know, has not been really well explained in the movies, right? Like Wanda's powers from the comics are just incredibly powerful, right? Like she is reality bending, and we've seen very little of that in the movies.
Yeah,
they've manifested it in a couple different ways,
but nothing since Age of Ultron, really.
Right? Yeah, and even there, it was used in very sort of specific, a specific fashion that
it was like a Charles Xavier kind of mind messing, kind of thing, rather than like a. I'm just going
like
to be
warping reality.
Kind of
wonder how much
she did that, and then it went pow 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 with a lot of the red laser beams after that. But
right,
you're right.
A lot of telekinesis, like, throwing things,
but we haven't seen a whole lot of her messing with people's minds.
Right, and so I wonder if that's
once you join the Avengers, they're kind of like, maybe don't mess with people's minds so much.
Could you dial back?
We're more comfortable with concussive injuries.
Except Tony Stark has satellites that launch killer drones, and he gave it to Peter Parker of all people. Like I don't necessarily know.
They're not
that
the best
decision
makers.
That does sound
like
Tony,
I don't think they're equipped to deal with teenagers. Like I just,
it's true.
No, that is in fact kind of Tony's charm. Iron Man 3 when he's dealing with a kid, he's just not treating him like a child at all. He's he's treating him like a dumb human.
Jerk. Like, I think what I hope we get more of in future episodes that we're not really getting here, like, the undercurrent in these first two episodes is people are afraid of Wanda. Like, that comes through in both episodes. And Wanda and Vision seem, like, pleasantly puzzled by their life in some ways. Like, there's that throwaway line in the first episode where I think it's one of them says, you know, you have the brain of supercomputer and I can alter reality. Why do we put a heart in a calendar?
Why do we need shorthand? Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, ooh, that's interesting. But like Wanda's a pretty deeply tragic character, and she carries around a lot of guilt, because in the first movie that you see her, she's been warped by one of the stones into a terrorist, and she repents of her actions, but in the process, like, her brother dies, so that's like another bereavement, another loss. And mm-hmm. then in the next movie, she effectively causes an international incident that lead to the Sokovia Accords, and she's marinating in guilt over that. She becomes an international fugitive terrorist after that. She has to kill her boyfriend, only to have some big purple jerk unwind that and kill her boyfriend in front of her again. And
yeah, that,
like,
sucks. I really hate it when that happens.
We've all been there. Come on.
But, like, this is a character who's probably, like, in deep trauma and grief and mourning, and I'm just a little, I'm like, oh, please treat, I'm like, please recognize this. Please don't turn her out to be, don't make, like, this series twisted with, oh, Wanda's the bad guy all along, because that's probably not the case.
It's, like, interesting, too, because both of those commercial breaks that John pointed out before are clear links into those traumas, right? The bomb that didn't kill them, that had Stark on the side, that she references in Ultron, and Strucker, obviously, who was responsible for her transformation. And so it seems to be hinting at that, like, you know, sort of things that have traumatized her or things that have affected her deeply in the past. And this is sort of tied up with that in some way, and almost as though she is sanitizing, like, her life, whether consciously or not. But one of the things I wanted to mention, which I liked about this so much, is the fact that they commit to the format, right? They commit to the sitcom bit, especially in episode
one.
Which
I was very surprised that both of these episodes, I mean, I thought maybe the first one would be like that, and then the second one we get a little bit more like what's going on with S.W.O.R.D.
But I think they're going to keep doing this until,
exclusively
sitcom. I think they're going to show more and more cracks, basically, as it goes. Yeah. Like, something is starting to interfere, and it's disrupting this reality, but it's going to be, I think it's kind of a slow burn, and I have to say, I really enjoy that, because it gives you this opportunity to play in a space that you could never really play before with a Marvel property.
Yeah, and it takes a break from the, like I wrote someplace, it takes a break from the punchy stuff, you know? I mean, and people have complained about that, that they have superhero movie overload because of all this, you know, like, you know, you get these... Particularly as we built up to Endgame, the movies became much more like, okay, here's a huge CGI battle for a lot of the movie. And I think people were just kind of like, okay, and it's another CGI battle. And I still love these movies because I'm neck deep in this, but I also, recognize that that is a thing. And that's why I appreciate this show so much right now.
Yeah. Oh, agreed. So one of my favorite things about Avengers Endgame is the credit sequence afterwards, where they just keep flashing with Gwyneth Paltrow and Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer. And it's like a kid showing off their toys, where they're like, we have all of these A-list actors who showed up and brought it. But the flip side of that is you have these people who are really good at their craft, and you don't get to see them do it that much. Like, I mean, they're acting their hearts out on green screen, and bless them for that. But, like, this is really a showcase for Bettany and Olsen, this TV series. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that they're letting them act, that it's not just, okay, now put on this costume and stand by this green screen and pretend you're talking to a raccoon. But rather it's like, okay, dig into this character and make us invested and let us have some space to get to know them, because we don't get that with the movies. And I love the movies. I've watched many of them repeatedly. And like I said, I love the flex at the end of Avengers Endgame, where it's like 5 minutes of, and we have this actor and this actor and this actor.
It kind of reminds me of that old SNL fake commercial where it's like all the foods combined, like take a waffle and then put a pizza on it and then wrap it in a burrito. It's like, it's a little bit like that. Like we keep, did you ever forget we had this person and this person and this person?
Also Bradley Cooper, also Vin Diesel,
and they just showed up for voices.
It's the people you can see and the people you can't see.
That's and again, the credits are great, and I watched them the first time and I was like, what an amazing corporate display of posturing, like, because they're like, all right, DC, your move. We have scooped up all of the Academy Award nominees from 1970 through 2010. What will you be doing?
But I was sort of expecting them to do something with the credits sequences.
Yeah.
And,
oh,
and
yeah, same.
Same.
Other than they haven't really done anything. And they're crazy long on Disney Plus, like, because they do that weird thing where they go through the normal credits sequence and then they put in like all of like the foreign credits as well at the end.
No, I was looking at the end of the credits for clues, because they have that first sequence of credits and you see that it starts with the close-up of Wanda's eyes and then it gets increasingly more abstract and ends with like two interlocked rings, almost like an infinity symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching it with my family. We're like, all right, criminology time. And my 10-year-old wanders in and she's like, wait, that house is being assembled by those squares. So is Wanda doing that? And I was like, oh.
And those squares are pixels, too.
Yeah, exactly. So what's going on?
It's a voxel, Dan.
Sorry, guy. I know you know more about this than me.
Two things. A, I really appreciate that Disney Plus wants to show you all the credits. I think that it is a creator first avenue, effectively. Like, if you make something for Disney, you worked for Disney, and they're going to basically make you watch all the credits. Netflix is like, hey, do you want to skip the intro? Do you want to skip the recap? Do you want to skip the credits? Do you want to skip the whole thing and give a rating? We can do that too. Like, it's fine, which is a different way of looking at things. And I appreciate that at least Disney, and I'm trying to remember what Apple does now. And I think they do the same thing. And so, and I get where you're coming from. Like, there's
my only complaint is because they often embed something in the credit sequences that Disney Plus's interface makes it hard for you to search for that.
I agree. I concur. I suspect that they're just not going to do that. So you won't have to do that.
I think. I think they might do it at the end. I think they might do it at the very last episode.
Yeah, maybe inevitably we're going to miss one. But
I'm not going to miss it, guy.
Okay.
I will spend hours fiddling with that interface.
Okay, man. Okay, you watch those credits. Yeah, I'm not even saying it's a great UI necessarily, but I appreciate that it's there, and I kind of
I think they should totally give credit to everybody. Yeah,
yeah, I take that. Mm-hmm. We were talking about their commitment to the bit, and man, they really commit to the bit.
Mm-hmm.
If I've got one complaint about this show, it's that it doesn't quite land the comedy that they're riffing on, and a lot of the show feels like I'm watching one of those older shows that they're referencing, and it wears on me a little. I guess I really don't need to fight anybody. Any of you both really?
Too bad. We're fighting.
I don't need them to fight anybody. I guess. But
let me tell you why your personal opinion is wrong.
That's weird. That's my whole shtick. I just
didn't mean to steal your signature.
You're stepping on my That's all me, baby. Nobody else in the history of mankind. It's always men too has ever done that. I it's a lot, and it's landing pretty well. They do a pretty good job, but it's not quite. They're not nailing it enough that I want to watch it at that level. I'm watching it at a let's dissect it and try to understand what's actually happening kind of level. I don't know. Maybe I was just impatient. Maybe I expected something different. And what I do suspect is that as we go forward, cracks in reality will start happening more and more, and we will be exposed to understand what's happening.
And the trailers seem to, indicate that.
Yeah, and so all of that said, while in these first two episodes I kind of wanted to understand what the hell was happening, I am giving them full credit for basically giving me two middle fingers and being like, no, we're not going to tell you. Crazy stuff's afoot, and you're going to have to deal with it. And I really admire that. While being a little frustrated that I would like to know the premise a little bit more.
I appreciate the pacing in this age of binging on television series. I like that I have a week to think about things. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's in lockdown in the UK, and she had said that one of the things she appreciated the most about The Mandalorian dropping new episodes every week. She's like, it gave me some structure and something to look forward to every week.
Yeah.
And
so like, you know what day it is.
No, well, she's been furloughed. So yeah, this actually does for her. And I feel like for the next 7 weeks, I'm going to have that with WandaVision, where I'll have something to look forward to and a little routine to have every Friday night. I'm also looking forward to rewatching it once we hit episode 9, to rewatch it and say, okay, how did they set this up and do the payoffs, and when did this start and what should I have picked up the first time around? But yeah, like if you ask me, say, what's this show about with the first two episodes, I'd say, they are time period sitcom homages with an undercurrent of tension and fear, and I don't know where it's going.
that's pretty accurate. I'll also tell you, that's about it, right? Good news, Lisa, you get to have this routine for basically probably the rest of the year, given the number of series they're rolling out.
So, I'm pretty excited about that, actually.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It is nice to have that as sort of, especially Fridays, I feel like it's a nice capper to the week. Sit down, maybe order some takeout. Watch some TV. I also like that, as with The Mandalorian, they can do the variable show lengths and kind of make things exactly as they long as they want to, which means, like, if we're doing sort of mimicking a traditional sitcom plot from the, you know, 60s, we can do a half hour show and be done and sort of wrap everything up rather than having to fill a time slot. And then I've heard from what I've read that these shows do get longer as the series goes on and maybe moves a little bit more out of that format.
Yeah, first one was 26 minutes, second one was 36. I just watched them again, like, right before we started recording. I really like that. That is, again, something that Disney seems to have embraced. It's like, wait a second, we don't, like, a 42-minute runtime is not a thing that we need to worry about. We can just make them as long as we need to make them. And I think that's a kind of insight that I think will get better television, or just better.
So as long as
same product, but you know,
as long as we are talking about conspiracies and theories, I know, you know, we're all feeling like, man, maybe we don't know what's exactly going on. The one thing that we do have sort of recurring is S.W.O.R.D. And for those who aren't aware of S.W.O.R.D., S.W.O.R.D. is basically a form of, it's not S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's sort of a parallel to S.H.I.E.L.D.,
Space Shield.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we have not seen officially S.W.O.R.D. in any of the MCU properties so far. They've been somewhat hinted at with the post-credit stuff from Spider-Man, Far From Home, because we know Fury was in space, and that would make sense for him to have some of that associated with it.
In space, looking for his shoes.
Looking for his shoes. That's what happens when you go to space. You lose your shoes.
Yep.
And we certainly are aware of, say, you know, the Kree and the Skrull. Being out there and obviously, you know, having impacts on Earth. We also know that coming down the pike, there are some more stories focused on that kind of thing, like the Secret Invasion stuff that Disney tipped. So it's suggesting that perhaps maybe there's a larger arc going on with some of these shows as well. Do you guys have any ideas what S.W.O.R.D. is doing here? Like, it seems like a weird choice, although
it does seem odd.
Unless aliens are involved.
Yeah, so
they might be.
That does lead, because you had mentioned... Lisa, you had mentioned aliens, and maybe that's somehow tied into this, but it's hard to say. And I'm interested to see how these, you know, these other people who we know are going to be in the show tie into S.W.O.R.D., because Jimmy Woo, who we last saw was an FBI agent, possibly now in S.W.O.R.D., and then Kat Dennings as Darcy Lewis is going to be on, and we also get Monica Rambeau showing up soon, which will be super fun.
I don't know if you're going to edit this out or just shout me down if I'm not.
Yeah, those are the two things that we do.
Edits and shouts. We know Monica Rambeau is already in the world because she's Geraldine.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, is Geraldine, did she pick that name as an homage to Flip Wilson's 1960s comedy bit, The Devil Made Me Do It, where Flip Wilson dresses like a woman named Geraldine and justifies her shopping expeditions with "The Devil Made Me Do It." And I'm like, ooh, deep cut, nice. What I'm wondering is if Wanda isn't interfacing with aliens, because you have people who are trying to interrogate her pretty persistently. And I got the vibe in episode 2 with the whole "Fire the Children" and all that. I was like, maybe these are aliens who are talking to Wanda. So when you do have that whole, "I assure you, I mean no harm. I don't believe you." Maybe that's Wanda talking to aliens, and you have S.W.O.R.D. involved because Wanda was their front, their advance woman, and it's gone sideways somehow because the aliens were able to pick up on her psychological trauma or something. But I'm pretty convinced that that more than one of the characters that we've already seen and talked to is some sort of alien entity.
Interesting. I like that theory a lot. It does seem to fit a lot of the pieces that we have.
Yeah. And like, television shows have been beamed into space for forever, so maybe this is their and they're like, this is how we interface with people. This is their culture. So if we talk to them in their cultural terms, clearly they'll understand what we're about.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Yeah.
The series.
So I feel like we've seen aliens already. We'll find that out later.
I think we've hit peak Star Trek reference. I think we're done.
Yes, Star Trek has done it all already.
Well, we also do know that Wanda shows up in the multiverse of madness with Doctor Strange later, which also throws open the possibility that there's some sort of weird multiverse shenanigans going on here. But I do think the alien thing seems more likely explanation. Yeah.
Well, so given the universe, the MCU at least, is Mephisto an alien?
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean?
I want to congratulate you on throwing thousands of theology into question. Thousands of years of theology are just thrown out the window now.
Hey, that's what we do here on Biffcast.
Yeah, the hard-hitting questions.
We had Kant on, Immanuel Kant on last week, and this week
what's
it's
his
you.
Favorite Star Trek series?
Oddly, Enterprise. He's really into I don't know why. He's just really horny for he just really loves the decontamination.
He started singing the theme song.
Yeah.
Weird.
He's a weird guy.
We're like, Emmanuel, please stop. Okay.
Yeah. E-Man, take it down a notch.
He's not coming back on the show, just to be clear.
No. No, I don't even know if we're going to run that up because he was weird.
We simply can't have him on.
Oh, I'm glad someone went there because I was gonna. If no one else did.
Isn't it good to have somebody new on the show that we can actually sound funny to? It's been so long.
Hasn't heard our material
laughed.
Over and over
stupid
again.
Star Trek, stupid Star Trek material and puns.
Do you guys have any other thoughts about WandaVision that you want to bring up before we do a little bit of superhero sweep at the end here?
I love that you got to say it's about WandaVision because you know we're just going to keep riffing on Star Trek.
Oh, yes, I do. I'm trying to bring you back.
I think we should do a rating.
Oh, a rating. Well, it's been a while. Could you remind me how the rating system worked?
I can't.
I would be happy to. Biff is the best rating because Biff was a henchman in Arrow season 4, and he just had Ollie dead to rights, and his boss was horrible and just didn't respect him, and he ended up getting killed, came back as a ghost, got killed again. Biff, solid Biff. That guy was hardworking, man of the people, deserved a minimum wage that was a lot higher. Let's say $15, just to throw in a little bit of that.
That's crazy talk.
What's the next one? John Jr. is middling. John Jr. is the baby that replaced Sarah, little baby Sarah, because the Flash ran really fast, and all of a sudden little baby Sarah got replaced by John Jr., which means we're not happy about it, but it's not really his fault.
But
it's not his fault. We can't be mad at a baby. So you know that, you know. Alex was again in season 4 of Arrow. He was a clipboard carrying get out the vote kind of guy. And as I say that out loud, I'm thinking we should put him a lot higher up on the appreciation list.
I wouldn't call him that.
He was a flunky.
He's just the most boring.
He was just checking things off on a list.
Yeah, not even actively bad, just so boring and dull that it's pointless.
Terribly written.
Yeah, exactly.
And you knew he was going to die, and sure enough, he did.
Yes. We don't even know.
Spoilers for season four.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Anyway, so those are the three levels. Biff, John Jr., and Alex. I guess we'll start with you, Lisa.
throw her under the bus. Yeah, that's right.
Well, yeah. I mean, how do you feel about these apps?
I don't think we're having any surprises here, are we?
Okay, so I need to rate these on a scale from Biff to Alex, is what I'm understanding.
That is correct.
Yeah,
okay, is this episode by episode or series by series?
Your call. Dealer's choice.
While I took a long time explaining this, I don't want you to...
It's not that stringent a system.
Right, yeah. It takes longer to explain, and we don't care about any of the results, so...
Yeah, I feel like it's starting off... In Biff level, honestly, you know, between the acting and the sets and the time they're taking to unspool the story, so I'm 100% Biff at this point.
I think that's...
we'll see how I feel after 9 episodes, though, because like anyone can take off in a plane, but landing the plane is a whole different deal.
Right,
that is true.
Yeah,
that is true. Yeah. I'm going to concur with Lisa. It's a Biff. It would be a Biff if the only scene that I got was Paul Bettany drunkenly apologizing to a banister. I think that in and of itself would probably lead me heavily into Biff territory. But overall, the show, I like that it's got just enough tease to make you wonder where it's going. I appreciated them dropping 2 episodes the first week because I do feel like it has a, like, towards the end of episode 2, you get a little more of a hook into, like, man, what is going on? I should come back to this. This is interesting. Mm-hmm. But I honestly love the homages to the classic sitcom stuff. I understand where you were coming from, Guy, on that. But at the same time, I felt like they executed so well on the premise. I cannot help but really just admire all the work they've done here. And like Lisa said, Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany are both fantastic. And this really gives us a chance to delve into those characters in a way that we have never gotten time for. So all in all, it's a Biff.
John.
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a Biff. And I would have loved to have a third episode drop just because I would like to see more right now.
What else are we doing with our time?
Exactly. I think it was probably a good place to stop for, you know, keeping people interested. Like they gave you just enough to keep you interested. And they're great performances. I think it's funny enough that it works on both levels to me. It does pay a great homage to these old sitcoms. At the same time, it's actually, you know, there are actual jokes that made me laugh with modern day sensibilities. So I enjoyed it all.
So I actually came into this conversation considering giving it to John Jr. And I've been turned around a bit, but like a lot of the comedy, like the two bed comedy, and I know it's the Dick Van Dyke stuff, and I get it, I really do, but it's not really bringing me anything. Like I wasn't really getting that much out of it, other than like, okay, good nod to this, and he's doing a great job. I'm not sure if that's what I want. After having had this discussion, I feel differently. And I think, I don't know why, everything's swimming these days. So I was probably just in a grumpy mood for who knows what reason when I watched these things. And yeah, I'd give it it's a Biff. They're both Biffs. They're Biffs because...
Thank God. I was worried there for a minute.
Hard-fought Biff. Wow.
No, well, sometimes you got to earn a Biff. Biff didn't have it easy. Biff got killed twice. Come on.
Is that an unprecedented 4 Biffs? I mean, I don't know if we've ever reached that level before.
We've never reached 4 Biffs before. And yeah, I eked it out. And I did. I wanted to be contrarian. But no, I've been turned around. And this is a great, great show. It's super interesting. And you know what? To be perfectly honest, it would have got a Biff anyway because my ex-wife is in it. And... you know, Anna, come back to me anytime.
Yeah.
I can't keep track of all guys' relationships.
It didn't work out between you kids.
No, do you know what I do like? Is like when I weirdly crush on people, they're like age appropriate, which I feel is like, okay, maybe that makes me a little less creepy about crushing on people on TV. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
I'm not in charge of that. All right. That is our discussion of WandaVision, and we'll be back next week to talk about the next episode that drops, episode 3. But before we go, I want to do a really quick superhero sweep. So let's meet over in the superhero suite conference room. I booked the conference room for this hour. I just want to be clear.
Is this Picard's ready room or yes, like the actual the conference room?
No, it's where, the one that looks like it's from a Marriott.
Okay.
In space. Space Marriott.
There's like 8 lukewarm tiny bottles of water in the middle of it.
Exactly. If you're lucky. I wanted to mention a piece of casting news that came out this past week, which is the first, I think, official casting news from the upcoming Disney Plus Moon Knight series, a hero very near and dear to my heart. And that is Ethan Hawke. Will be playing a, I believe, unspecified villain in that show, which I think is, you know, once again, the MCU doing its fine job of adding to that collection that we discussed with Lisa earlier on, where it's like, we could get just get somebody we've never heard of, but we could also get Ethan Hawke, so why not? It made some waves because I guess a bunch of people like pulled up some old interviews he'd given where he talked about how he didn't like superhero movies. And you know, whatever. I'm not too bothered by that. You know, actors got to work like everybody else, and I'm sure they offered him a lot of money, and, you know,
yeah,
that's fine.
No, I don't.
I don't think that will, you know, hurt his performance in any way. I like Ethan Hawke. I think he's a fine actor, so
yeah,
I think that's interesting. Oscar Isaac is still rumored to be playing Moon Knight, but has not yet been confirmed, so would not surprise me if they're working out some contract details on that. But I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that. I don't know. We've talked before about Moon Knight runs and the incredible variety and bizarreness of some of them. And also now having seen the first couple episodes of WandaVision, I think it's easier to picture, like, in some ways, you kind of know the bounds, right? And you realize, like, all right, we can go weird. So doing a, you know, Moon Knight series based on some of the recent runs that are extremely trippy is totally plausible.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's good. He's good. I mean, I recently saw a movie for the first time called Predestination that he's in, which is a really interesting movie, and I enjoyed quite a bit. And it's very sort of unusual the way they tell the story. And I think, yeah, sure, great. I don't have a lot to add.
Do you think they'll go the trippy route or the Batman route?
I don't think they need to make a Batman movie about trippy
Batman.
I mean, that is
Moon Knight. I feel like Oscar Isaac has such a track record of willing to go weird for no reason whatsoever that, like, the only way they're going to get him to sign on if they're like, yes, Oscar, you can put on pancake makeup every day and hang upside down and recite some lines. And he'd be like, excellent.
Yeah.
My instrument.
I'm in.
Yeah.
You had me at pancake makeup.
And I feel like Ethan Hawke, I think he's interesting because he still pushes himself in his craft, even after having been in the business for nearly 40 years. And I think it will be a lot of fun to watch him. The same way it was like a lot of fun to watch Vincent D'Onofrio way back in Daredevil, where he was clearly committed to the role and trying to bring something new to it as well.
Like, that guy's such a powerhouse. He's just incredible.
Yeah. And it's so weird because sometimes Marvel has a problem with villains in its movies, but it's TV shows across all the different media. They do a really good job of casting villains. And I think they did it this way too.
David Tennant. I was just going to say Purple Man. David Tennant was incredible. Yeah. I mean, it's David Tennant. It's going to be, it's going to be top notch, but oh my God. Who was the bad guy for the first half of Luke Cage season 1?
Oh, Mahershala Ali.
Who is in? They screwed it up, but it's not
his
fault.
Yes, they did.
Oh my God, that was
multi Oscar winner, right?
And not like not by accident. Like hard won, literally. Like he is an incredible actor, and he killed it. That show was amazing when he was the bad guy, and then they kind of screwed it up.
Oh, yes. Alfre Woodard is also pretty fantastic in that show as season 2 villain, but
Well, like Tom Pelfrey, who's like basically the beta villain in season 1 of I was going to say Golden Fist, and that's not the name of it. Immortal Iron Fist.
Yeah.
But Golden Fist is a different thing, Lisa.
Yeah.
Shiny Fist.
Yeah, but everyone's like, oh, Tom Pelfrey in Ozark, he's fantastic. And I'm like, anyone who suffered through the Immortal Iron Fist can tell you that he was like the best thing about that show because he played a multidimensional villain. So so they do good villain casting for TV. And I think Ethan Hawke's like a good addition to that canon.
Something to look forward to. Well, all right, that's about all we've got time for this week. But I would like to thank especially our special guest, Lisa Schmeisser. Lisa, thanks so much for being here this week. This was awesome.
Thank you for having me. I hope I can do it again. This is great.
Absolutely. I'd like to, of course, thank my usual compatriots for being here as well. They're also awesome, but they know that. John Maltz, thanks for being here.
It's biffs all the way around, Dan.
Ah, excellent. Excellent. Guy English, always a pleasure.
There's a biffette. Don't forget. honestly, Lisa, it's been so fun having you because I get really, really tired talking to these two idiots. Honestly, it's really great.
We're still on the air, guy, just so you know.
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
That's my, your mic is hot. Just want to let you know that.
Just tap it to see if it's.
Yeah, that's fine.
Is that?
Yeah. Awkward. Yep. That's there on. You go. Yep.
It's on. Okay. Anyway. Yeah,
see, still on.
Yeah. So my outro. Great show, everybody. Love all of you. I can't get enough of talking to each and every one of you every week.
Nice save. All right. Well, thanks everybody out there for listening and supporting us, reading the transcripts. We really appreciate all of you tuning in, and we will see you next week.